Hey everyone, my name is Andrew Warner. I'm the founder of Mixergy, where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And I say that I do this for an audience of real entrepreneurs. And that's why I'm so proud whenever I interview an entrepreneur here who's a listener, who's somebody who's been listening, who gets it, who's been following along and built something really successful, something so big that I want to interview him here so that you in my audience can get to listen and learn from him. And ideally, use what you learn and build a great company and come back here and do an interview about how you did it. Now, imagine if you weren't an entrepreneur, though. Imagine if you were a venture capitalist looking at a lot of investments all day long, and this guy walks into your office, guy from Argentina, and he says, "I have a great idea." Well, he says it with a cool Argentine accent, but you know what I'm saying. He says, "I got this great idea. It's luggage." You go, "Dude, luggage. Do you see the iPhone? Do you see computers, the web? What are you doing? Luggage?" He says, "Yeah, luggage." And he goes on to tell you about his luggage idea. If you're a venture capitalist, do you continue with that conversation or do you just say, "Actually, I need to back away"? Well, if you continued with that conversation, you'd end up with a big hit on your hands because that's what today's guest actually built. His name is Diego Sanchez Gil. He is the founder of BlueSmart. It is not just luggage, but really intelligent luggage. If you look at his website, bluesmart.com, you'll get to see how it works. I'm just going to read a few of the bullet points from the site. It lets you lock your luggage remotely. It lets you charge your devices. You know how when you're sitting at the airport, you're always in need of some charger, especially when the flight's delayed. Well, in his case, the luggage will actually charge it. It lets you locate it if you ever lose it. And of course, it'll also let you weigh it so you know how much your luggage weighs. All right, that's what he built. Let's find out how big the business is. And the reason we can do all that is because I've got two incredible sponsors who are paying for ads here. The first will help you hire your next great developer. It's called TopTal. The second will allow you to get your customers on the phone. It's called Acuity Scheduling. And I'll tell you more about both those later. But first, Diego, good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
You were smiling as I said all that. What are your revenues now? How much have you made with this luggage?
We have crossed over $10 million in revenue last year.
Over how long?
So, yeah, a year and a half.
$10 million in revenue.
Yeah.
Wowee, dude. Did you actually have the kind of conversation that I imagined you might have had with an investor where you said, "Here's it is, it's luggage," and they said, "Luggage"?
Actually, yes. I mean, because when we start, one of the things about building a hardware product is that you do need certain – it's more difficult to bootstrap, right? Because you do need to – manufacture and get some samples and start paying for physical products. So at the beginning, we actually did a very small angel round before going on crowdfunding, which you know we can talk about. And yes, we got a lot of these kind of answers. And it was funny to see how you know they came back later saying like, "Wow, that was impressive how you pulled it." You know, so yeah.
You are Argentine. You grew up in, is it northern Argentina?
That's right, in Tucumán, which is in the north, close to Bolivia.
What's that like over there?
Well, it's an agricultural area. There are mountains. It's beautiful. Definitely a place to visit.
And you didn't so much have businesses growing up as you had a rock band that you treated like a startup. How did you do that?
Yeah, I say that it's one of my first entrepreneurial ventures because you know I learned to play the guitar, and then when I was in high school, we had the chance to you know form a band. And we needed to get gigs. We needed to build our brand as a band. And it was my first experience, you know, sort of like leading a project. And I loved it. And then I said, well, I want to do this, but in other areas in business as well. And that's what, you know, made me want to be an entrepreneur, you know.
And the first real thing that you built came from when you were backpacking through Europe. I did that. I freaking love backpacking through Europe.
Yep.
And you stayed in hostels. Right?
That's right.
What was the experience of staying in hostels like for you?
Well, I was broke. I was traveling in Europe. I just got a scholarship to do a master's in Barcelona, but I really wanted to travel and see Europe. And you have these you know, cheap train tickets in Europe and then hostels. And but then I loved it. I actually you know, made so many friends from all over the world, and it was just like a very enriching experience. And yes, that's how I came out with the idea for my first startup, which was how can we use the internet and mobile to help young travelers book accommodations and connect with other travelers and you know find things to do along the way. So that led me to co-found a company called WeHostels.
And WeHostels was going to do what? Allow like it was going to be like Expedia for hostels?
That's right. And that's what we did, but with a focus on mobile. Because, again, at the time, there were some websites, but you had to go to the computer of the hostel. And, you know, it wasn't that, you know, easy to do, whereas everybody was starting to buy smartphones. And that's what we saw.
Did you raise money for it? It seems like you did, right?
Yeah, we raised a seed round with that company after we already had the product in the market. It was starting to get some traction. And yeah, you know, it was a bunch of different angel investors that
was it.
Yeah.
You didn't do did you raise 1.2 million according to AngelList?
Yeah.
That's what you did. You got 1.2 million to create like an Expedia for hostels, all mobile.
Yeah.
Okay. And that sounds actually pretty interesting. So I remember the hassle of finding hostels, right?
Yep.
But I did it using a book. Frankly, they don't change that much.
Right.
Right? But it's still a bit of a hassle because you have to call them up to say, do you have room?
Exactly.
Right? And that whole thing. Is that what you were trying to solve?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the fact that you are going along the way and you want to find, you know, kind of like easily a place that you can arrive and it's going to be the most affordable and the most fun, right? So we figured, you know, all this information is kind of available there. We can put it, you know, out there and make it very easy to book from your phone, you know.
So then that seems like a winning idea, right? People who are traveling are more open to new experiences. So if you offer them experiences, like it feels like it's a natural fit for advertisers, right?
Right.
They might pay for tours. They might pay for side excursions, right? Why didn't this thing work then?
No, I mean, it did work. At the same time, we were facing a lot of growing competition from Airbnb that was starting to get traction. And from Booking.com and, you know, Expedia themselves, they were going into this, you know, kind of like more affordable accommodation like hostels, and they were going strongly into mobile. So at the beginning, we had like a really good traction because the fact that we were mobile first.
Uh-huh.
But then that advantage started diminishing. And in that moment, we actually started looking for partnerships with, you know, some of these, you know, bigger travel companies. And from one of those conversations came an acquisition offer.
Student Universe.
Right, which is one of the largest travel agencies for students. And it wasn't a huge acquisition, but it was kind of like a good way for the company and the product to keep growing with the support of a bigger company that had kind of like the user base and the funds to, you know, keep growing the product. No.
Wait, so someone who wants to travel through Europe would either go through a hostel or consider as an alternative Airbnb. To me, it feels like Airbnb and Expedia and the others are so different from a hostel. In a hostel, you get to be with a bunch of other people, kind of like the college experience I never had, versus Airbnb. You're on your own mostly, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think Airbnb started, if you remember, as a couch surfing kind of thing. You rent a couch, right? So you could crash in some people's places, you know?
So there was always a social element. And now I see that they're reintroducing the social element by having the host maybe take you for excursions and so on.
Exactly.
I see.
But yeah, no, I agree that the hostel experience is definitely unique and it's amazing. Totally recommend it. But yeah, today, if you go to Student Universe, well, number one, you can book discounted flights. And we actually built that mobile app, you know, after the acquisition. And you can also book hostels on their app, which is based on the app that we built before, you know.
All right. You talked to our producer and you said, look, in confidence here, we made some mistakes. If we're going to be on Mixer D, I want to be open about the stuff that we didn't do right. And team was one of the big mistakes. Talk about the mistake there or the challenges that you had there.
Well, I think that... you know, team building is definitely one of the biggest things in a startup. You know, you have to have the right people at the right time and be able to, you know, build, you know, kind of like a very strong bond between the team. And at the time, you know, we were kind of like, we built a team that was spread out between different places that, you know, made it harder to build this sort of like, you know, tight culture that you want for a startup. And I think that sometimes, you know, it's really important to, you know, take the time to find the right people as opposed to just, you know, kind of like moving fast and hiring fast. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things. But yeah, we made tons of mistakes, a lot of mistakes. And that's the only way you learn, you know.
So just having them remote meant that you didn't have the bond, but you also felt like you didn't have the right skills in the people that you hired, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, none of us had the right skills. You do need to bring people that have skills that are different than yours. And yes, I mean, I think that...
all right, so that's kind of a startup thing, that you get the people that you can, not the ideal people all the time.
Exactly.
So then why don't we focus on this whole idea of having a team that was remote, and as a result, you couldn't create a bond.
Right.
Why was that an issue, and what did you do to try to deal with that?
Well, one of the things we did do was doing retreats every so often.
Yes.
But I do think that at the beginning, like, the core team needs to be together at the beginning. You need to have, like, this sense of... we're all in the same boat. We're working really hard together. We're working from, 24/7, right?
Yeah.
And that is very difficult to do when you're remote. I do think that, there are some companies that manage to do it, or later on you can have different teams or different offices.
Yeah.
But at the beginning, I think it's very important to be all together when you're figuring out the product.
Okay. All right. And then the other thing that you said was you had a hard time picking the right things to focus on. In fact, you probably spend a little too much time on PR.
Yeah, I do think that one of the biggest things in a startup at the beginning is you don't have too much time and bandwidth to do too many things. So the distractions can be very hurtful. You need to focus on really, really few things that are the most important
ones.
What
should you have focused on, if not PR?
I think you should focus on product. You should focus on customers. You should focus on marketing, but that's like secondary.
But if you focused on product, you still couldn't have kept Airbnb from coming into your space. You couldn't have kept Expedia from coming in. What would focusing on product have done for your business?
Well, figuring out faster which were the features that the customers wanted, iterating, fast on that.
When you did it right, do you remember one feature that you learned from your users you needed to build and you built and it helped grow the business?
Yeah, I think that in that particular case, it was about making it very easy to complete the transaction, to book, right? And reducing the friction on the mobile phone where, kind of like it's a smaller screen.
What's so a bit of friction that you removed that helped increase sales?
Well, I remember that, for example, one thing we did was the ability to take a photo of the credit card and take the numbers.
Yes.
We were one of the first to implement one of these features, And these kind of things, increase the conversion rate a lot and people loved it, as opposed to other features that we thought that people were going to want and they didn't,
What did you add that you thought people would want but they didn't?
We did add some social features that were related to connecting with Facebook, which were cool in theory, but then people didn't really use it and didn't really love it.
Like what? What's a social feature? Who's going to stay in town?
You could see who else was going to stay at the hostel. Yeah.
Why do you think people didn't want that?
I think it was a security or sort of like a safety thing of like, wait, I prefer to arrive there and there I want to be social. But I don't want to share my information before I arrive there,
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. I would have thought that would be something people want, but I think you're right. I also would want a little bit more anonymity once I was there.
Right.
That one of the reasons of staying in a hostel is to make new friends and kind of be a new person at every different stop.
Right.
Okay, all right. I can see how that was all an issue.
Yeah.
And you sold the company. You told Pando at the time, pando.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a quote. "I can tell you that our investors walked away happy." For investors who put in $1.2 million, what does happy mean? Does it mean getting their money back? Does it mean 10xing? I mean, talk in the abstract, because they don't just want their money back. They want a big exit. They do want the 10x.
Right.
How do you make them happy if you don't give them the 10x?
I think there is a difference between angel investors and venture capitalists. Venture capitalists, their business model is, yes, they need a 10x because they're going to invest in – first, they invest not their money, but they invest – other investors' money. They manage other investors' monies and they know that they're going to have a lot of losses.
Mm-hmm.
So they need the wins to be very big, right? In angel investors, it's different because angel investors generally, they are investing their own money. They are not, this
but
is
you
not
didn't
their
have,
job.
You had professional investors. You had Ventech, you had Quotidian Ventures, you had TA Ventures, right? Those aren't guys who are like looking to pat you on the back and say, good job.
No, absolutely. We did have some, but they were like still seed investors. I think that, as I'm going to say, like most investors in venture have this model that many startups are going to die, and then a few are going to be, it's like a power distribution law,
right.
A few are going to be 10x or 20x or 1,000x. And, you know, some other number are going to be like smaller returns, and a lot are going to be losses. The earlier stage you are, the more okay you are with, you know, not, you know, 10x or 1,000x.
I see, okay.
And they are definitely happier to have a return than to losing money.
Did you make money on it?
I made some money.
Tens of thousands of dollars?
I was able to pay all my student debts and,
okay.
have some paychecks after a lot of years of hard work.
Did you pay the student debts off of the sale price or off of the salary that you collected afterwards?
Off of the money that I made, yeah.
From the salary? I see. Okay.
No. Of the exit.
Yeah. Oh, so it was a nice exit that if you're getting paid, the investors got paid, everything's good. I see. By the way, I got to tell you, Pando does some really good work.
Yeah.
I don't know why Pando just never fully took off. I got to get Sarah Lacey on here sometime to just talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I discovered was the company used to be called InBed.me, which is a freaking great name. You had to change it when the investors came in?
No, I think that we, from talking to users, we noticed that there was some kind of like possible negative perceptions.
Right. I imagine a lot of women are not looking to go to a hostel where they're potentially going to fall into bed with someone.
Right.
Yeah. It is kind of a scary situation, frankly, hostels.
Right.
All right. But I did have some of the best times of my life at hostels. I never went away to college. I'm the kind of person who I said, you know what? I know it's kind of childish to stay at home, but if it means that I'm going to save more money and get to focus on my business and get to really like have a better life for myself after college, I'm going to stay at home. And so I stayed at home. I worked like mad. I wasn't loving the fact that I didn't go out, but I didn't care that much. And I think it was ultimately good for my business when I started it after school.
Yeah.
But I did feel like I missed out on the whole college dorm experience, and going out and staying at hostels and backpacking gave me that feel.
Absolutely. I think everyone should do it. It's a great life experience.
Diego, is it inappropriate for me to ask you if you're a millionaire now because of this business?
It's not inappropriate, but no, I'm not.
You're not?
Yeah.
10 million. So what does that mean? How much did you make in profit from this?
From
Blue Smart.
With hostels? Oh, from Blue Smart?
Yeah.
Well, Blue Smart still hasn't exited the company.
And you guys are profitable?
We are not profitable yet. We are close to
profitability.
Yeah.
Okay. Where does the majority of money go outside of cost of goods sold?
Product development, research and development. We need to be, working on new
products.
More
so even than marketing?
Yes.
Wow.
Actually, yes. Yeah. I mean, I think that in every sort of like consumer electronics product, you have to be investing a lot on, being one step ahead of the competition. So we are actually, working hard on new products. And we think that that's going to be what is going to, bring a lot of value in the future.
And your big vision is what? To be like the Samsonite luggage? Is Samsonite actually a valuable company?
Oh, yeah. They are $4 billion company.
$4 billion. So if you could become like Samsonite, that would be a huge exit.
I think so. I mean, it's a very large industry, and people travel a lot. I think it's $32 billion in revenue worldwide, the luggage space. So we saw this is a very large industry. We can bring a lot of innovation, a lot of fresh ideas and technology into the space, and hopefully make the life of travelers better,
I see. Well, so Samsonite's a Hong Kong company, is that right? Not a U.S.?
They started in the U.S., but now they're a public company in Hong Kong. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So we'll find out how you came up with this idea in a moment. But first, I got to tell you that I feel awful about this. Yesterday, I had tons of paperwork in my office. I hired a woman to sit here for hours and do nothing but scan everything into my computer and toss it out. And as she did it, she accidentally tossed out and then had shredded this card that I got from a guy named James Ashenhurst. I really appreciate it. I'm so pissed that it's gone, because James sent me a note and he said, I've been putting this off for too long. And this is a guy who sat down and wrote by hand in a digital world. He said, Andrew, I've been putting this off for too long. I use TopTal. He said he had this business. He had an issue with his search. So he hired TopTal to help fix the user experience. They paired him up with a guy named Stratos. Strata did a fantastic job. They fixed search. They really end up improving his business. And he's so happy about it that he sent me a note by hand to tell me. Wow, that's interesting part. First of all, that he had a problem for a long time, couldn't find other people to solve it. And James is a freaking smart guy. I interviewed him on Mixergy. He could find people who are good. He wanted someone great. That's the hard part. The other thing that stands out for me about his card is he included the name of the developer, right? A lot of times when you look for developers that are just working on an individual project, you think of them as the project people, and you think of them maybe as the people you found through some freelance site. No, James told TopTal what his problem was, told him what he was looking for. TopTal went out and found the right person for him to match his temperament, the length of the project that he was working on, and the way that he wanted to work with the person. They matched him up, James got a match, and they were able to work together and build their business. That's amazing. The incredible part about TopTal. Do you know TopTal outside of Mixergy?
I do, yes. And as we were talking, I think that finding the right people is a key thing on startups. So, I mean, it's great.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. I often emphasize the intelligence of these people. It's more than that. It's the right person for your business that TopTal does, which is why the first thing that somebody sees when they go to TopTal is an onboarding process that includes a phone call with a real human being at TopTal. They want to understand what you're looking to do. Then they go into their network and they match you up with the right person. It's all very handmade, hand done, all done by hand.
Right.
Right? To the point where if you're out there and you're listening to me and you want to find the right developer for a project the way that James did, for a full-time gig, for a team of developers who are going to help you out, and you want an intro, I'd be more than happy to introduce you to a guy that I've known at TopTal for years. So I'll give you my email address, and then I'll give you a special URL. You pick whichever one you want, the personal touch from me or the direct TopTal link that you can go and get on the web. My email address is andrew@mixergy.com. Super easy, right? Andrew@mixergy. And if you want to go directly to their website, actually, regardless of whether you do it from their website or through me, here's what they're giving Mixergy listeners. 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when they pay for their first 80 hours. So if you're listening to me, you can get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit. And that's in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. They're so convinced that they're going to match you with the right person that they are giving you 100% satisfaction guaranteed offer. All right, go to toptal.com/Mixergy. I listen to myself by the way, Diego, from time to time. I realize I do jumble the name TopTal. I have to slow down and say TopTal and maybe even say top as in top of the mountain, tal as in talent, or maybe even say toptal.com/Mixergy.
Great.
Great sponsor. I'm glad to have them. The idea came to you when you lost your luggage. How did you lose your luggage?
So I was going to Argentina to visit my family for Christmas, and I was bringing a bunch of gifts on my suitcase, and we had a stop in Panama, I think. And I think there is where the suitcase got rerouted to another airplane, or I don't know. And then when I made it to Buenos Aires, I was waiting in the carousel, and the suitcase never made it. And, you know, I didn't have any clothing and I didn't have any gifts for my family for Christmas. So it was like a big problem. And that got me thinking, you know, how come there's not a way for the airlines to know where the suitcases go? And then I did some research. Turns out that 25 million get lost every year. So
that's a big problem. But let me ask you this.
Yeah.
25 million bags get lost every year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
We're talking about at airports? I mean,
Yes, I mean, 25 million bags get reported lost to airlines by travelers.
Wow. Okay, that is a lot. But here's the thing, though.
I think it's one every 150 passengers.
I still don't think of it as a problem and probably won't until it happens to me. And then if it does, it's kind of an inconvenience because they eventually give it back to me. So that's not the market opportunity, is it?
Well, I think it's these kind of things that if it ever happened to you or if it happened to someone that you know how problematic it is.
I see.
So you want to avoid it next time.
So then why didn't you say, you know what, I'm going to create a beacon of some kind that will help people go and find whatever they lost, whether it's luggage or a purse or something else. Why did you then jump to the I'm going to create luggage?
Because that was sort of like one of the ideas, but then that got us thinking, And again, then I kind of like got together with a group of friends that, you know, are my co-founders. And we started thinking, I mean, this is just one thing of a lot of things that can be done to reimagine what a suitcase is in this century with the technology that we have available today. The same way that, you know, Apple is reimagining the watch and making it a computer that does all these other things, you know, we could take on this space and try to reimagine the entire product experience with these technologies and come out with a lot of different features.
What was it about luggage that excited you as a product?
Well, I was a travel geek. I love traveling. And I always loved physical products. And, you know, at the time, actually, when I was a backpacker, my only belongings were either a backpack or a suitcase, you know. And I used to say that, you know, I'll live out of a suitcase, you know.
So you minimize your stuff to the point of fitting in a bag, and that was it.
Exactly. I'm still trying to do that, by the way. I would love all my belongings to fit on one or two suitcases. You know?
Where are you today? Where are we talking?
Right now I'm in San Francisco, but I'm living in New York.
Yeah. I see. Okay. Where are you, in an Airbnb?
No, I am actually at a friend's apartment.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Crashing.
Are you here for Saster?
No. I just came to have a few meetings.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you had this idea.
Yeah.
You then had to create some kind of a prototype, right?
Right.
What did you put into the prototype?
So we did several prototypes. One was just sort of like an Arduino electronics prototype that we attached to a bag. Another was sort of like...
And that's like basically, before you go to the next one, that's basically a small computer that you can program to do anything. And it doesn't matter if you lose it or if you break it because it's so inexpensive. What did you have that little device do for you?
Well, we then got, you know, off-the-shelf components to do, you know, the location tracking, to do the locking and unlocking mechanism, which is like basically an electromechanic, you know, actuator that, you know, locks and unlocks a lock. We had a battery. We had sort of like a lithium-ion battery. And we were testing out things, you know, how could we make it work, you know?
You know what? I've never played with it, but when I hear you talk about it, it's like Lego for adults.
That's clever. Right. That's right.
Wow. Exactly. And so how did you do location tracking? Was it going to be like within Bluetooth range, or did you have some other vision for it?
No, we actually, well, at the beginning, we just had to research what were the possibilities, and we ended up finding that the solution to actually make it work worldwide was to do it with a SIM card and basically use a cellular network so that we can basically sort of like send a text message to the bag, wake it up, and then use GPS, which uses satellites to triangulate the location, and then sends a text message back to the server with a location.
That I had no idea. That's how it works today?
That's how it works.
Use a SIM card in the bag.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, so this is like real stuff.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Wow, so you have to have a SIM card. What does it cost you to have a SIM card that basically is on forever?
Yeah, well, we did a partnership with Telefonica, which is a big telco.
Yep.
Sorry, let me plug the
computer. Oh, you got to plug in. I saw that you've got some kind of anxiety going on there.
Yeah, it's like 1%.
I was wondering, maybe I thought your friend needs you out of the house.
No, it's 1% battery. Now,
what are you, on the new MacBook?
Yeah, it's a MacBook.
Is it the new MacBook Pro, the one whose battery issues people have been talking about?
It's a MacBook Pro from a year ago. Okay. I don't know. This is
before the whole battery issues that people bring up.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So you made a deal with Telefonica.
Right.
Right.
And so we pay for the activation and the data of all the SIM cards. And we don't charge that to the consumer. We sort of like include it in the cost of the product. You know?
And it's forever.
It's forever, yes.
But you only have to pay whenever you actually interact with the device.
That's right. I mean, we're programming it a way in which it gathers the location every so often, and then it sends the location back when you ask it. And this is the moment in which it uses data.
I see. And that's all you pay for. What does it cost to do that per bag, would you say?
They charge you per bytes of data that you send. It's a few dollars.
Okay, so that's not so much then.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought it would be a much bigger undertaking. And that's worldwide, even though what Telefonica is...
It's worldwide. Yeah, I mean, they have roaming partnerships in 124 countries. So... It's almost
a killer. Okay, I see. So you said that's got to be in the first one. Why does locking have to be in the first one? Who needs to lock their bag remotely?
Locking was about, we talk a lot with potential users at the time and trying to identify what were the problems, right? Mm-hmm. And we identified that there were two things that people wanted. In one hand, you wanted peace of mind related to, okay, I don't want to lose my things. This is like the most important things I'm traveling with. And the other hand, they wanted convenience. And convenience was about going fast through security, accessing their devices, charging their phone, and these kind of things. You know, so we designed the features to address these two needs. You know?
Okay, I see. And what about charging? Why not just let people throw in a battery in there? Why do you need to build it into the bag?
Because we already need a battery to power the system.
I see. So you might as well make it user accessible.
Yeah, let's just make it bigger. And people, you know, we are so much in need of batteries today that they just put a USB port there and let people do it, you know.
So you know what? I think a lot about all the cool gadgets inside of it, even mm-hmm. though it doesn't look like a gadget bag. Mm. But what I read a lot from people who are fans of the bag is the wheels are really good.
Right. Right? Well, yes. I mean, we also learned that for these kind of products, the design, both from a how it looks perspective and from a how it works perspective, is super important. And we were also excited about that. You know, let's bring a new spin into how a suitcase should look like in the 21st century. You know,
how did you know how to make wheels that work that well? How I get that you're a geek to some degree, and Arduino I never can pronounce it right. Arduino.
Yeah.
It is like a fun thing to play with.
Right.
But what about the design of the wheels? Where did you learn how to do that?
Well, we started building a team with different skill sets, and we brought on board a really good industrial designer. And he's the one who came up with the wheels idea.
Where did you find the industrial designer?
He is an Argentinian guy who was a friend of one of our co-founders.
Okay.
And he's the one who came up with the wheels idea, and then he, did incredible work to make it happen.
Did you raise money at that point or after you had your first prototype?
We raised an angel round before going on crowdfunding.
Okay.
And to crowdfunding, we arrived with a prototype that was like a working prototype, but still needed some development.
Okay. Yeah. And then this was before Y Combinator.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
How much did you raise at that point?
We raised $300,000.
$300,000 just to create that first thing that you then ended up showing on Indiegogo.
Right.
Why'd you go to Indiegogo?
Well, we look at the two platforms, at Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And one thing was that we really liked the people at Indiegogo. You know, I actually sent an email to the two, and in Indiegogo they were like, oh my God, this is so exciting. We love this product. We're going to help you out. And it was just like a personal connection with someone at Indiegogo. And then second, because we're from Argentina and we knew that we could have a lot of friends in Argentina that could back us, it was, Indiegogo was more international. They have payments for international services. And I think those were the main reasons, Yeah.
So you put it on there.
Yep.
And you did shoot a good video. How much money did you spend on your video?
Well, we did the video in Buenos Aires, okay, which is very cheap. It looks like an airport, but it's actually a cruise ship terminal that was empty on the winter. And we got someone to let us in, and we shoot the video there.
So you packed it with all those people?
All those people are friends and family.
Really?
Yes, friends and family of the founders.
Yeah. We're acting like extras. We're just kind of, really? Okay.
Yeah, it was empty.
That's a pretty full little airport.
Yes, the place was completely empty, otherwise.
And they're all Argentine.
They're all Argentines. Okay. And we made it look like a JFK. We tried to make it look like JFK. I think that the video cost $5,000 on cash, and then, some promises of money in the future to some other people. You know? Yeah.
This is really well done. Didn't like the flaps close on their own in the video? It was like, right.
Right.
So I guess you just give it to the videographer and you tell him to do it.
Right. Yeah, we had really good people helping us with the editing and the post, production.
Okay. And you said, hey, internally we have this goal. We think we're going to raise $50,000, but you told your investors, we're going to do $500,000 with this. Is that right?
Right. Right. Exactly.
Why did you sell it so much to your investors? Why did you make such a big promise to them?
Because I mean, we thought that it was possible. It was difficult but possible, and we thought that this was you know frankly less than that, it would have been difficult to make it look like this had the potential to go and raise more capital and be a successful company.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you then hit how much total?
In total, it was $2.2 million.
$2.2 million.
Yeah.
So before we started, I said, come on, Diego, you got to tell me more than just we went on Indiegogo and it hit big. What else did you do? And you started telling me about Dynamo. You started telling me about this LinkedIn thing that you did. And you said, hey, here's what Indiegogo did for us that we couldn't duplicate without them. Let me talk about my second sponsor, and then we'll get into the details of how you promoted it within Indiegogo and then also outside of Indiegogo and how you grew the business. First, I got to tell people that actually, I should tell you, Diego. So I got really excited about Messenger bots a few months ago, actually about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, does anyone in Mixergy want to learn it? I thought, yeah, I could send out a survey, but that's not enough. Right. So I did a survey and I said, do you want to learn it? And when people said yes, I said, well, would you pay to learn it? And when they said yes, I said, great, pay a deposit.
Nice.
So people paid a deposit. And at that point, I could have said, you know what? I have enough information to tell me we should be teaching it. But I said, no, I want to actually talk to these people and see what they want to learn about Messenger bots and Messenger experiences. I said, how do I talk to all these people? 30 plus people paid. How do I schedule it around all my interviews and other stuff? And, you know, I got kids.
Right.
And there are people all over the world who are into Mixergy. So I went to Acuity Scheduling and I created a whole new calendar in Acuity Scheduling, which basically means they already have my existing Google calendars, LinkedIn, so they know when I'm busy and when I'm free. I said, look, Monday through Friday, I'm available at these times. Saturday and Sunday, here's when I'm going to be available to make phone calls. Here are the days that I absolutely do not want to talk to anybody. I want to just grow a beard and sit in the office quietly working. And I did all that. And then they gave me a URL that I could have given people, but I want it to look like it's part of Mixergy. So I took the embed code from Acuity Scheduling. I put it on a Mixergy page so it looks like it's all completely part of Mixergy. And I went to every one of the people who paid $30 and I said, hey, can we get on a call? And they all had a link that they could go to on my site where they could pick out of my calendar. And if one of them picked the date, the other person couldn't pick it. If one of them happened to be in Singapore, which someone was, he sees it in his time zone, not in Pacific time zone for me. I need to know their phone number because I'm not dicking around here between phone calls, right? I want to know. I have on my calendar. I want their phone number. I want it. Right? So I asked for their phone number. So time came. I had a calendar full of calls. I get to look through my calendar, see who my next call is with, see their phone number, instantly dial it. Boom, I'm ready to roll. If I wanted to do even more, like send all that data into my CRM, which actually I ended up doing, you could do it because there are tons of integrations with Acuity Scheduling.
That's very well. I scheduled this call with Acuity, and it was really professional looking and really convenient. Yeah,
that's important to me because that's your first impression of your relationship with me. That you go to this page where you get to book, and if it's a hassle to book with me, you're not going to. Right. So now, how does this relate to our audience? The way it relates to our audience is we all want to get people on the phone at times, and if we say, "Hey, are you free on Monday at 6 p.m.?" they don't know—is it 6 p.m. their time or our time? It could actually be that they take 3 days and to say yes or no, and in those 6 days, you're locking in Monday at 6 p.m. because you don't want anyone else to book. It's a hassle, which is why people don't get on phones enough.
Yep.
Or maybe you have this new product and you want to get on the phone with every new customer so that you onboard them properly, you understand why they buy from you. How do you do that? Well, Acuity Scheduling lets you do it. Yes, there are lots of other options that you can use, but the reason I like Acuity is anyone on my team can use it because it's super simple. It has integrations with everything, and anyone listening to me knows I love playing around with software to see how I can be more efficient, or have my team play with software to see how they can make me more efficient. And I also like that if I were to continue making these calls with people about bots, I could very easily slide someone else from my team onto my calendar. The user would not even know who it was. And they just know that they book a time. That was a little complicated. Let me explain it this way, Diego.
Yep.
I used to have one producer talk to people before interviews.
I see.
I then needed another one. I didn't want to have to give people like you, Diego, two calendars and say, Diego, pick producer one or producer two. You don't know which one.
I see.
So what I do is I mesh both their availabilities in one calendar. You just see the available time. You pick it. And whichever person happens to be free at that time who made that time available, you get to talk to
them. Oh, wow. That's really cool, actually.
Yeah, it's just fantastic. Anyone out there who wants to talk to people one-on-one, maybe add it as part of your onboarding process, maybe you're doing webinars and you want to include multiple people on, whatever it is, you've got to check out Acuity Scheduling. It's created by a longtime Mixergy fan. I used it from the beginning of, no, not the beginning. The beginning was hectic. And then we switched to Acuity and things stopped being so hectic. If you want it, because it's created by a Mixergy fan, he's giving us a special offer. All you have to do is go to acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy, acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy and get it. And that means you're going to get a 45-day trial. I could frankly have sold all of those people who put down a $30 deposit within 45 days and closed out my account with Acuity. That's how generous that free time is. So if you're listening to me and you want to use it, go ahead and use it. Within 45 days, you'll probably close some sales and maybe not even need to use it again. Or maybe you'll be like me. You'll fall in love with it because it organizes your company and grows your sales. Check out acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. What's Dynamo?
So it's a PR firm from London that we hired to help us get the word out there about the project when we launch on crowdfunding.
Do they focus on crowdfunding? Because it seems like they do Kickstarter and crowd.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of their verticals. So that's the reason why we work with them.
Okay, and what kind of PR do they do?
So, I mean, it's basically reaching out to, you know, newspapers and, you know, blogs and different media outlets before you launch a campaign so that they, you know, you try to have as many as them covering the crowdfunding campaign the first week. Because crowdfunding campaigns, like, if you don't get traction the first week, it's very difficult to get traction afterwards. So you need to have as much momentum at the beginning. So that helped a lot.
What do they get you?
We got into Mashable, Engadget, TechCrunch, and then the more mainstream ones, they only will write about you after you got some milestones. Like we were in CNN and BBC, but after we, you know, passed $500,000 or $1 million, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. We did a course for Mixergy Premium about how to promote crowdfunding campaigns from someone who'd done it really well several times, the founder of Hidden Radio, and he said, there are some blogs that will not cover you after you hit your milestone, after you hit your goal completely.
Yeah.
It's too late for
yes.
them. And then there are others who, as you're exactly. mentioning, only will exactly. cover you after you hit it.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
And then so there are people like me who are dicks yeah. who will not have you on until like a year afterwards because I want to make sure it's not just about an interview about that one campaign. So
no,
that's what having a PR firm helps.
You know, one thing that kind of like also changed is that there are a lot, there's been a lot of projects that never deliver the products. And that is not—it's not good for the crowdfunding, you know, world. But you know, that's why important to arrive to the crowdfunding in a moment in which you know that you can actually make the product and deliver it.
So, by the way, I'm looking at this Mashable article.
Yeah.
5,400 shares on the article.
Oh,
which
wow!
Is really cool. Your co-founder, Tommy, is talking
yeah.
about how he also had a couple of bad experiences with luggage. Let
yes.
me ask you this. Be completely open with me.
Yeah.
It feels like you guys have a nice origin story, and I lost my
yeah.
luggage once, right?
Yeah.
How much of it is origin story to describe the story in a way that's sticky
yeah.
to the audience, and how much
yeah.
is the truth varied from that?
No, I mean, it's definitely something that happened and what, you know, got the initial spark of the idea. But then, you know, origin stories are much more complex and definitely, so this is like, that was the spark of the idea. I got together in New York to have a coffee with Tommy, and Tommy was actually a hardware entrepreneur. He had done another hardware startup before, whereas I had done a software startup.
I see.
And I would never have started a hardware startup if it wasn't for him, who told me, dude, this is a genius idea. We can also put this and this and that. And then he actually kind of like, you know, exploded what the idea
okay.
could be, and then together we decided to make it happen. And then Alejo came on board, and Brian and Martin, who are like the other founding team members, you know.
All right, Mashable and Gizmodo and so on. What's the place that sent you the most users?
Mashable, CNET, I remember.
You actually got, I mean, customers. You got customers from CNET? Can you actually
yeah.
trace that? You can, okay.
Yeah, totally. CNET, Engadget. That first week, you know, then TechCrunch wrote a little bit later. Who else? You know, sometimes there were some blogs that, you know, I didn't know about, but they you know, brought a lot of traffic as well. You know, like Boston Innovation, Bostino.com, you know, brought a lot of traffic. And so you have, in that sense, you had to have the PR firm reaching out to a very wide range of media outlets.
If you saw me space out for a second, it's because I've been looking at Tommy's LinkedIn profile. I see his background, why he'd be a good fit. The company that he had before, and boy, this guy loves the color blue. He's got to.
That's
every
right,
freaking
right.
thing in here. Little Blue is a company that he worked for. He co-founded Little Blue. Little Blue makes student clothing in Latin America. Yes. He then co-founded Big Blue, is a design company for Fortune 500 companies. You work with Disney and Coca-Cola, and now Blue Smart. That's where the blue comes from, and that's where the design and product comes from.
So when we were thinking about names, he said, like, okay, the only thing that I have is that there has to be the word blue, you know, on
the
name.
What's with blue?
He just loves the color blue, and I happen also to love the color blue and say, okay, I'm fine with that.
Plus, the guy looks like Johnny Ive, am I right?
Yes, a little bit.
A little bit. He's got Johnny Ive haircut. He wears the Johnny Ive t-shirt, at least in his LinkedIn profile.
Right.
Did they also at Dynamo help you tell your story better? Because I do notice a very disciplined way that you explained it in lots of different places.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that one of the challenges at the beginning is that you need an outside view of how you are communicating the product. We actually spent a lot of time, especially for the script of the video, making sure that we could communicate in a very concise way what were the benefits of the product.
How do you do it? What's the way that now you say it?
Well, the way is that, you know, instead of listing features, you go and you describe a problem and solution, a problem and solution, you know, like...
Can you do it now? What are the problem and solutions to describe the features?
Well, 25 million bikes get lost every year. We have GPS location tracking worldwide. Run out of battery at an airport is pain. You know, life is too short to fight for an outlet at the airport. And a 10,000 milliamp battery charger on your suitcase all the
Got
time.
Got it. I see. Charger. Okay. So it's not just we have a 10,000 milliamp battery. It's why, what's the problem and then how it solves it. Got it. Okay. What happens now when people are going from, USB-A to USB-C, and now all the devices are going to be USB-C? Is this going to be a situation where people are going to have to throw away their luggage every time there's a hardware update?
I think that there's going to be, for a long time, sort of like, you know, backward compatibility, but then, you know, technology evolves and, you know, luggages are is something that people renew every 2 years.
It is.
Because suitcases get beaten up, you know, and generally, I mean, frequent travelers renew it every 2 years, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah.
The other thing that you did was you went into your LinkedIn profile, you found all the people you're connected with, and I see that you've got over 500 people. Once you hit 500, LinkedIn says, that's it, I'm stopping to count. It's not a measuring contest. But what most people don't know is you actually get to get all those email addresses out of LinkedIn, right?
It's a way to download everything on an Excel sheet. And you can do the same with Facebook, by the way, too.
I could get the email addresses of the people who are on my Facebook? Really?
Yeah. The way to do it, this
Tell
is
going
to happen. Okay. You actually have to connect with Yahoo and move everything to Yahoo. And then from Yahoo, you download it.
Okay. Wait. When you say move everything to Yahoo, what do you mean?
So you have to have a Yahoo email account, which I think I created one to do that.
Okay.
And then you say upload Facebook contacts to Yahoo contacts. And then from Yahoo, you download the list, you know. Actually, if you Google.
Yes, it came up. It wasn't the first result, but if I Googled it, it definitely came up. It's on labnol.org if anyone wants it. Or frankly, just Google export Facebook contacts to Yahoo. I had no idea this was a thing.
So I did that. I did that with LinkedIn and with Gmail. And then I had this very long list of all the people who I ever met, you know. And then I emailed all of them, letting them know about this project.
Did you do it individually or did you upload it to something?
I did it on MailChimp, I think.
MailChimp.
Yeah.
I see. And you didn't get into trouble with MailChimp because these people didn't sign up for it?
No, because it was a personal note, you know, and it has an unsubscribe thing. Yeah. And now one thing that I did do, I remember because, again, I grew up in Argentina. I went to school in Spain and then I lived in the U.S. So I have half of my people speak Spanish, half of my people speak English. I went kind of like one by one, separating English, Spanish, and then I wrote two emails, one in English, another in Spanish.
Oh, wow.
To make it more personalized, you know.
Through thousands of emails.
Yeah.
By the way, this guy who wrote the article about getting email addresses from Facebook into Yahoo, his name is Amit Agarwal. This guy's freaking brilliant. Every time there's something wacky I want to do, he not only writes a solution, but he gives you the answer. Like, I'll tell you one thing that I want to do.
Yeah.
I need an easy way to forward messages to my assistant, like mm-hmm. unsubscribe me from something. I don't even want to hit the unsubscribe if I could avoid it. He has this script that you upload to Google Drive that connects to Gmail that as soon as you tag a message with something, it automatically forwards it to an email address.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I just tag it with assistant and automatically forwards it to my assistant, which is fan-freaking-tastic.
Very cool.
He's just brilliant. I can't imagine he's making money off of this stuff. He created the whole script. All I had to do was copy it into my Google Drive. But he's brilliant. I had to let people know about that. You gotta know that this guy's got good stuff out there for you. Mm-hmm. All right. So that got you some customers. Do you have any sense of how many customers you got from that?
No, because there isn't a way to know, but we got kind of like the initial start of, you know, the friends and family supporting you, and then the press came, and then, you know, it was kind of like a combination of all that, you know?
And then Indiegogo has a newsletter. What'd you do with them?
Right. And then a few days later, because the campaign was getting a lot of traction, Indiegogo generally takes the campaigns that are hot, and then they send a newsletter saying like, these are the hot campaigns of the week. And we got a place there, and that helped us a lot too.
Any other hacks? I've talked to people who are on – actually, a woman who was on Kickstarter who said that if she could get a lot of people to even donate $1, that adds momentum in Kickstarter, which helped her get more attention in the Kickstarter rankings. Did you do anything like that?
Yes. I mean, I think that we did ask everyone, look, if you – you know, don't like the product, or, you know, don't have the money to pre-order the product today – help us with a dollar, or help us with sharing it, you know.
Because the dollar helps with tracking or with rankings there?
Yeah, I think it's part of it. You know, you need to create sort of like a sense of momentum that many people are supporting it.
How did you know all this stuff? Is it Dynamo that helped you understand it, or did you interview people who are
We did a lot of research, but I also remember reaching out to a few people who have done campaigns successfully.
I see.
Asking them their tips. You
know? What do we do? Okay, I can see that that's really helpful. And people who've
done
well.
For example, I reached out to a guy called Jake who did a company called Electric Objects and raised almost $1 million on Kickstarter. And he was very helpful in giving me some tips, you know. And now I try to do the same, you know, when someone, you know, comes to me, you know, pay forward and,
yeah, you're
you know,
doing
share.
It right here now with tens of thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people.
Right.
You mentioned earlier the product. The first version was Arduino on a regular piece of luggage. Yeah. The next version, I think, was cardboard or something. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we did put together a lot of different, you know, cardboard things and things like that. And then it was really going to China and start meeting with factories that could manufacture the product and then building prototypes with them.
How'd you find the right factories to go to?
Well, that was Tommy, frankly. That's part of his, you know, skills, that he'll go to China and find factories. But, you know, it was asking a lot of people that we knew, you know, how to, you know, who could be the right factory, and visiting a lot. You know, I think that in one trip, Alejo and Tommy went to China, visited like 26 factories. And none of them ended up being the right factory. But it was just a numbers game, you know.
I get that. And so when you're making these different samples at each factory, what does that cost you and how much time does it take?
Yeah, it costs a couple of $1,000s. So it takes, you know, generally a couple of weeks, sometimes, you know, a couple of months. So that's one of the challenges of hardware. Things are more expensive and slower.
Yeah.
And you don't want to waste time, you know, taking too long on samples, you know.
So you seem to be doing well on your own. Why'd you go to Y Combinator?
Well, as you said at the beginning, you need... to, you know, this is a hardware companies need to raise capital because it's capital intensive. And, you know, for us was about getting as much validation as possible. And the crowdfunding campaign was one validation point. Going to Y Combinator was another validation point. And then frankly, you know, I did think, and I definitely, you know, confirmed that the mentorship and the advice that you get from the partners and the community around is super valuable.
Yeah, they're legendary for that. Do you have a story of what you got from them, one experience that changed your business or your product?
Well, you know how we were talking at the beginning about the distractions of not focusing on the right things. And one of the things that the partners at YC are really good at is at all the time reminding you what you need to focus on. And so you have like these weekly office hours with partners, and they'll tell you, okay, what did you do this week? And then you'll tell them, it's like, you know, why were you focused on the thing that is not the
like
core?
What? What did you not need to focus on that
well,
they had to get you back on track?
Going to conferences or, you know, trying to do a partnership deal, you know, when you don't have a product in the market yet, you know, this kind of thing, you know. So the beginning is just product and talking to customers and putting the product out there and
improving. Nothing but product and talking to customers. If you said something else, like we're going to talk to Engadget because one day we might want the Engadget writer to report. No, they say stop that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see. But by the way, speaking of mentors and advisors, Patrick McGinnis is the guy who introduced us. He's the author of The 10% Entrepreneur.
Yes. He's been an investor in my two companies.
Oh, so that's your connection with him.
Yes, yes.
What do you think he's interested in this book? He's got this idea that you don't have to quit your job. You can do this in your part-time.
Yes.
What do you think of that approach?
I really like it because I think that, you know, in fact, when he told me about the idea, it's like, well, this is actually not uncommon in Latin America because in Latin America, you need to have additional income, right? Mm-hmm. You know, jobs don't pay very well. So I like this idea of, I think it's a really good way for people to test the waters of entrepreneurship and then go full on. You know, I don't buy necessarily on the idea that you need to quit everything and then start a company. I do think that many startups start as a side project, you know, as an idea that you start exploring with friends and then you go full on, you know.
I've noticed that too.
Yeah.
The 10% Entrepreneur, that's the name of the book.
Yeah. Yep.
So you got into Y Combinator. They helped focus you. You went through Indiegogo. That gave you tremendous, tremendous recognition. I felt for a while there that I was seeing you everywhere. There was one week where you were everywhere. We talked about how I saw you on Product Hunt, where they don't feature hardware anymore. But at the time, it was a thing.
Right.
So what shocked me was you seemed to be on fire. What happened when you guys nearly ran out of money?
Well, the thing is that, as I said, hardware is capital intensive. There is a working capital component that you are investing in you know, in having, you know, a lot of products being manufactured or being shipped to customers. And that the more you sell, the more money you need, you know, incredibly on a hardware company. And yes, I mean, as we started shipping a product, we started selling very well, but we needed more money. And, you know, we had to go and do fundraising again, and it was hard. You know, last year was a hard year for hardware startups in general and for fundraising in general. And fundraising is never easy, to be honest. But last year, I think, was particularly hard. So it took longer than expected. But again, this is a moment in which persistence is, you know, the most important value that you need as an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. We persisted through it, and we ended up, you know, finding investors at the end. But it was rough during the time.
Who, when you finally raised money, who'd you raise money from?
So we raised money from a combination of Chinese investors, Silicon Valley investors, and Latin American investors.
How'd you end up with the Chinese investors?
Well, because we have an office in Hong Kong now. We manufacture in China. And I went there and I started meeting investors there as well. And investors in China love hardware, actually, because that's what they do. You know, they manufacture products. We found a fund that, you know, had a thesis around connected devices, and it was a really good fit, and we ended up partnering with them.
You know what? You're a guy who's traveling around a lot. How do you stay in the U.S. as an Argentine citizen?
I have a green card now.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Wow. You must feel really like lucky to have that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
When did you get your green card?
A few years ago. Yeah.
Okay. This is before you started BlueSmart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, we had a lot of stories with BlueSmart of, you know, applying for visas for people to come here, getting rejected or taking too long. So, I mean, immigration is something that...
I hear that all the time. And then is it easy to get into China and Hong Kong and just travel the world as much as you do?
Hong Kong is really easy, actually, to get a job visa even. Mm-hmm. China, to visit the country, you need to get kind of like visas that, you know, they give you two entries and then you need to renew it. It's always a challenge.
I remember being in Argentina and every 3 months we had to go to Chile for just like a minute. You just cross the border, you know, the drill, right?
Right.
We got so comfortable doing it, and Chile has like not as good food as Argentina, in my opinion. So we go and we spend the day eating food that wasn't as good, but experiencing something different. We got so comfortable in Argentina, we finally forgot. And we said, "Eh, it's such a joke. No one really cares that you leave." And we got a penalty because apparently they do care that you leave. Yeah. They do want you to actually follow the rule, even though it's kind of seems silly.
Yeah.
All right. You did it. You built this big business. You're imagining you're back in San Francisco today because you're raising more money. True?
No, not at the moment. At the moment, you're focused on launching new products and on getting partnerships to go to market faster and so forth. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But the big vision is we're going to get to multi-billion-dollar valuation. Am I right?
I mean, it's not about the valuation. It's about, hopefully we can build a company that sells, that touches the life of a lot of people, selling a lot of product, helping millions of people travel the world. And if that happens, consequently, it's going to be a big company, a successful company,
Yeah. Oh, man. It's got a lot of buzz from people who really are very hypercritical. And that's the thing about hardware. I think we'll accept a bug. There's this journaling app that I use that now crashes multiple years into its development. 5 years in, it crashed yesterday. I accept it. But when you have hardware, if a little seam is off, people will look at it like they are suddenly Johnny Ive.
It's true. And the thing about hardware versus software is that bugs are really much harder to fix because sometimes it's a firmware bug that you need to send an update over the air. Sometimes it's an electronics bug, and then, good luck with that. That's more difficult to fix. Whereas in software, you just, go and fix on the air and things.
Any advice for finding a good factory in China?
I think it's important to talk to other American companies that work with them. You need to ask them for references, and they'll put you in touch and see how is the experience of working with them. I think that going to one of the really big ones at the beginning is not a good idea because you're a very small client and they're not going to pay attention to you. And going to a very small one is not a good idea either because they might not be prepared to make thousands of products. So you need to go to a, sort of like a mid-size factory that loves your product, loves your project, and it's going to support you.
And I have found from doing these interviews that talking to other entrepreneurs who build products similar to yours in this place where you want to build it is really helpful. Even if all they do is they turn you away from the wrong ones, it seems to help.
Exactly.
But often they'll help you find the right ones.
Yep.
Okay. Before I close this out, let me tell people about a tool that's helped me dramatically on Mixergy. Search has really been an issue for us because we have over 1,000 interviews. I started out using the built-in WordPress search. It wasn't so great. Then I moved on to, WordPress, but actually, Sorry to the audience. Saying it's not so great is really an understatement. I was trying to be nice to WordPress. It sucked. So then I went to Google search, and Google pretty much gave up on site search. They have no interest on being a part of our site, really. So their software sucked. Then someone turned me on to SwiftType, also a Y Combinator-backed company. We plugged it into our site. It just worked beautifully, and now our developers have constantly built on it. I even hired someone from TopTal. He kept adding code to SwiftType because I said, we're not getting rid of SwiftType. You could be the biggest genius on the planet. You're not going to beat SwiftType, so code with it and make our search better. So I want to say thank you to the founder of SwiftType. I've had him on here at Mixergy. He's been nice to me, and I want to share that SwiftType is a great product. Since we've talked about tools, I want to talk about that here. And I'll close it out by saying we hired from TopTal. Our members have hired from TopTal. Our interviewees have hired from TopTal. If you need a great developer, team of developers, go check out toptal.com/Mixergy, toptal.com/Mixergy. And if you want to get on the phone with your customers or potential customers, I am telling you, I've been talking about it for years. You've got to try Acuity Scheduling. It'll help close more sales, help you understand your customers better like no other software out there. And it'll integrate into your site to the point where they won't even know they're on a different piece of software. Go check out acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy, acuityscheduling.com/Mixergy. And finally, I intentionally did not ask Diego to show his luggage here because I think what he did was stunningly beautiful. Frankly, if Johnny Ive were to design a piece of luggage, I believe this is what he would design. I don't think Skype is going to do it justice. So I'm going to urge you, if you're curious about what we've been talking about, the last thing I'll suggest is go to bluesmart.com and take a look at it. Everyone's going to look at all the design of the hardware, and I get it, to see that you can charge, you can locate, et cetera. I say look at the wheels. I say look at that little thing that who the hell gives a rat's ass about wheels, and look at what they did with the wheels. All right. Thank you so much
for being
here.
Thank you very much, Andrew.
You bet. My it's pleasure. An honor to have you on here. Congratulations on your success. And I hope that you come back here as the company grows and do another interview.
Absolutely. Thank you very much and keep it up. I learned a lot from you and got inspired by you. So keep it up.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And thank you all for being a part of Mixergy. Go build something great and come back here. Let me interview you too. Bye, everyone.